Welcome back to another episode of Run Yogi Diaries. This is your host, Santosh Shiva. If you're new to the channel, please do remember to subscribe. If you like this conversation, hit like and leave your comments below and let us know what you think. Excited to have today in the house, Jamie Linker, an amazing athlete and a different kind of an athlete that I've ever had in my show. She rose competitively across oceans. Yep, you heard that right, across oceans. She's had records to row across Atlantic, across Pacific, and she's gonna go do some amazing stuff in the future. But most importantly, what's unique about her story is that her adventure serves a larger purpose of bringing awareness to eating disorders that she dealt with in her life that pivoted her into endurance sports. Amazing conversation. I loved it. I'm sure you're going to love it. There are nuggets of wisdom and so much to learn from her. Let's dig in. Hey, Jamie, welcome to Run Yogi Diaries.
Hello. Hello. Thanks. It's nice to be here.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. You are obviously a very accomplished endurance athlete. You've been conquering the oceans. Not all humans do that, but we'll get into all of that. But let me maybe take a stab at introducing, giving a brief introduction of who you are, and then we'll jump in.
Sounds wonderful.
So Jamie Linker, you're a Colorado native, live among mountains. Interestingly, you're not climbing mountains, you're going in the oceans. We'll find out how that happened. You're an endurance athlete, of course. But also you're a professional, you're an HR professional, and right?
Yep.
And I saw that you have a degree in integrative health, dietetics, exercise, sports. Oh, that's pretty cool. And you also have a degree in psychology. So it seems like a lot of that is probably also behind some, great stuff you're doing out there in the ocean. Did I miss something?
No, that's all the education has led me to this moment, right? So hopefully it's all for the better.
Terrific. All right. So Jamie, I think maybe what we should do is do a bit of a flashback and get back to where it all started for you, the why of it, what got you into endurance. And so let's jump in.
Yeah, so I guess it all started when I was 19. The last time I was 19, I guess I got hospitalized for a third time with an eating disorder, which almost took my life. I got down to 67 pounds and had 3 heart attacks and ruined my nervous system and was suffering from hypothermia. And I had struggled at this point for 7 years with an eating disorder. And finally, I knew I had to make a change because it clearly wasn't working. I had landed myself there again in the worst condition possible. And so once I got out of the hospital the last time, I knew I had to do something to keep myself accountable for my eating in order to survive and go forward. So I started training, and it was great because it helped me eat and it allowed me to stay accountable-ish. However, after some time, it didn't do very well any longer because I didn't have a reason to just constantly be in the gym. So I started seeking out originally 5Ks, but with debilitating asthma, that wasn't very great at the time either, since they didn't have the medicine to where it is today to help me be able to do those. So I started getting into OCR racing. And that started, and the adventures were fantastic. It was everything I'd loved since I grew up doing obstacle course racing, and it broke up the running. And it gave me a reason to train for something, which held me accountable for my eating. However, they just weren't the type of challenge I was trying to seek. So over time, I started seeking out the hardest of those events, which grew into now seeking out some of the hardest events and, I guess, unsanctioned events all over the world.
Interesting. Fascinating indeed. So I want to double click a little bit about on this eating disorder itself, right? So it seems like you were dealing with it for quite some time, almost 7 years, especially your growing years. And can we talk a little bit about like what caused it? I mean, was it because a lot of young people today deal with, you know, challenges of different kind, and they're coping differently. And there's a lot of, and you're of course, you have a degree in psychology. You probably have some theoretical background on this as well. But it seems like there's something that's causing this and leading to different kinds of these, you know, what's the maladaptations, if you want to call it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they can stem from anything. Most of the time it's, I mean, everyone that I've treated, everyone that I've encountered that's had an eating disorder, the things that they have in common they're very type A humans. They are perfectionists. They want and seek control. So when you're going through, you know, your adolescence and you start hitting, you know, puberty and things like that, you lose all the control in your life. Everything's changing. And so a lot of times, and usually because of what's happening internally, you have a lot of external factors that are changing as well, trying to adapt into growing and having more responsibility. And, you know, a lot of external life factors like divorce or, you know, friends or whatever it is, it's just really hard to manage. So at that time, that's kind of the reason I ended up getting sick, was I was deathly afraid of essentially having, you know, growing up and having all those girl issues start happening during puberty. And I didn't want that. And so I didn't weigh enough so that wouldn't happen. However, it stunted my growth. It caused a lot of the malnourishment at that young age, since it was in those developing years. It really hindered like brain function. It hindered, like I said, my growth, my how I was, like, it ruined my reproductive system. A lot of things that really started hindering because I wasn't fueling my body properly. But it was all in a way to control the environment in which I was in, where I had no control. And that's usually, not always, but at least with everybody I've ever worked with, that's always been the denominating factor, is it's just trying to find control in a world, despite what your trigger is for why you're not having these control. It's a way to start gaining control back to what's happening to you.
So when you talk about control, is it like, I know a lot of, you know, well, I have young daughters, and, you know, some of the things that I've heard is, you know, trying to fit in to a standard, right? You know, fat shaming, for example, or body images could be one, right? And I'm assuming that has some impact to wanting not to eat. Could be one way to, I mean, different individuals react to that differently. Some maybe this way, some maybe go into depression and anxiety and other things. So is that what you mean when you say trying to control the environment, as in trying to fit in?
Yeah, that was part of it. Trying to fit in, that was one thing. I know I was always more in the popular sector at school when I was younger. I was good at sports. And I was, had really good grades, ended up being like valedictorian and stuff like that. So I didn't ever have an issue, but in order, and fitting in wasn't a problem. I was different, but I was also very muscular because that's just how my body was and stuff. So once I got into high school and started wanting to date boys or have them interested in you and things like that, you know, usually I was not the girl that guys went for, because they would go for the more, I guess, the girls that were smaller than I was. They were a little bit more girly than I was, and that's fine. I usually was like their best friend, but the only denominator I could see was, because I'm like, I'm already the guy's friends, you know, I'm really good at sports. I'm really, you know, I'm good at, you know, education, stuff like that. I don't know. The only difference was the fitting in to be equal to my peers, where I weighed more and I was a little bit, not bigger, but I was solid muscle. And so I looked different than they did. So I'm like, well, I guess if I look like them, maybe, ergo me too, I wouldn't have this issue. And then it just spiraled down and down, and it got worse, because then you start controlling, well, I look like this, I could be better if I do this. And then your brain takes over and you no longer have the control that you thought you had.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think because you know, for folks, you know, parents are listening to this, or even kids who are in college who are listening to this, I think the content might be different for different people, right? But at the end of the day, it's really about not being able to accept who you are the way you are, right? And you're trying to fit to some, you know, some artificial standard, and then you're kind of hurting yourself in the process. And before you know it, it's working against you. And so, you know, it's a story for a lot of young people, and maybe even adults, right? It shows up differently at different phases of your life. But thanks for sharing that. And then you realized that you came to a point where it was like, you know, now I got to do something about it, because you come to this realization that this is hurting you physiologically and mentally and everywhere. And so you then chose to move forward and adopt an endurance lifestyle as a way to deal with that, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Years later, I eventually got to that point where my brain knew. It's still a challenge. I mean, I've struggled for 23 years, but yes, it was able to transition it into an endurance lifestyle in order to keep that accountability. But also it allows me to gain knowledge of where my setbacks may be, where I start having more struggles with my eating disorder and where it flares up and things in spite of the training or in spite of the travel or all the different elements of my lifestyle. And so with that, I'm able to mentor people a lot more and help them out, just like depending on where they're at in their journey as well and where they may be struggling or where they might start to struggle in the future. So we can really have that information to set up the best program to help them recover with the most success possible. So it's really just finding out all the information, which is really helpful. So I've kind of turned my life into an endurance athlete, but in hopes and with the mindset of gaining this knowledge to help others. So it's like leading by example, because no one's life is perfect, but you try to adapt your life and constantly better your life despite those struggles. And I just want to be able to help people so they don't have a life necessarily like mine.
Got it. And we do want to get into a bit of that. I know you have a foundation, and we'll probably pick it up again and later in the conversation about what this foundation does and how you help people, you know, in this journey, and maybe some tips and some methods one can use. So coming back to your journey in endurance sports itself, right? So you started the obstacle racing. Tell us a little bit more about that and what happened. How did water enter your life?
It's so funny. So I know, right? Being a Colorado native, you wouldn't think where I'm at now, but yeah. So I started doing Spartan races. Loved Spartan races back in the day. Phenomenal. I ended up meeting my community of friends, and they are just some of the best humans on the planet. Like, to this day, some of the closest people I have in my life, and I love them to death. And that's after like one event with these people. The things you go through, the way you're able to connect to people that you clearly weren't raised with, but are from other places that can understand you without having to know all the backstory, having to know all the eating. And we're all still able to relate, which it's never been very easy for me to find people who can relate to how I am. And so once I found this community, then we would go outside of racing and we would just be like, hey, well, we found this other event. Hey, let's go do it. Or we'd go and seek out just something that we would host for ourselves to hang out and go suffer together, because we thought it was a lot of fun. And that's just like-minded individuals doing extreme things. And one of my really dear friends, Mark Peterson, he used to be the head of Spartan Endurance. He found the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, which is the ocean race across the Atlantic. Reached out in 2016. We decided to build a team for it, and we were going to do it in 2017. Lo and behold, it didn't happen. We had some health issues arise from other teammates. So finally in 2020, I reached out to Atlantic Campaigns, who hosts the event, and asked to be on like a alternate program, because I really wanted to do it. And I'd been working with her for a few years. And I got in touch with a man named Dave Dunk from London. And we ended up hitting it off and we ended up rowing the Atlantic Ocean together in 2021. And then as soon as we got off that boat, it was about 2 months later, Atlantic Campaigns, they had announced that they were going to be launching in 2023 the first inaugural Pacific Challenge from California to Hawaii. And a teammate that I had met who was a soloist from the U.S., his name is Owen Gray, in the Atlantic Challenge, or in the Atlantic, Challenge, he reached out to me and asked if I wanted to be on a mixed pairs team for the U.S. in the Pacific race. And as you both had to have rowed an ocean to be in a pairs team before, there's not a large pool of people. And so we hit it off and Owen is fantastic. And we just completed that in July.
Wow. Awesome. So going back to the Atlantic Challenge, the first one, right? Give us a sense of, so how long did it take for you to prep, you know, and you're kind of rowing, what, for 45 days, 3,000 miles and out there, just you and another teammate, that's it, right? Give us a sense of what it takes and what about the prep? How much did you have to train? How do you train?
Yeah, all great questions, especially coming from like a landlocked state. Well, the Atlantic Ocean is from La Gomera, Spain, and the Canary Islands to Antigua, which is 3,000 miles. Our team, it took us 51 days and some change to do that one. And it was, we had planned, Dave Dunk and I, we had planned to go over to Burnham on Crouch, which is where he lived, which is also alternatively where the Rannoch boats are made, which is the type of boat that we use in the races. So I was going to go move over there and just stay with his family. COVID hit, so we weren't able to do that. And I had never seen a boat still at this point. So I train, I'm a multi-sport athlete. So I train, I swim, run, I go to the gym, I climb, you name it, I do it, whether I like it or not. And it keeps me in really good shape. So I'm just able to go do whatever event I find that I want to do or someone brings to my attention. So I just kept training that way. And then once the COVID flight restrictions were lifted in 2021, I went and moved in with Dave and his family. And I was there for a month in May. And we went and trained on the water. And there are certain requirements you have to have for the organized race. You have to have so many training hours. You have to train so many drills like man overboard, how to use a para anchor, how to use your water maker, which is a desalinator that converts the seawater to drinking water. So you have to train all those different things. So we did that in a month and I had to go back in September for a last like emergent, training. But other than that, I went and trained once in Florida with an amazing American team. It was, Row for Hope, Matt and Ben, they were wonderful. And other than that, I just kept training, had to prep my food since I can't just go and buy food. I have to individually make my nutrition plans with the macros and micros. So I'm sponsored by a company called Nutristore and they donate all of my food. So I make all my ingredients with freeze-dried food, like a backpacker meal. Mm-hmm. I have to seal it. So then that gets put on the boat. So it's a lot of prep, just making sure that your diet's going to be adhering to the amount of calories that are required per your body weight, per the race organization, the flights, the logistics, making sure you get those training hours in, making sure you stay fit, you know, while you're off the best I could, since there's no ocean here. And then I left to go row, I guess, the ocean.
Wow. And how do you develop fitness for something like rowing, right? I mean, most people understand running, biking, you know, because you see it, it's visible, swimming, of course, but something like rowing, what do you do specifically? What do you focus on the most to endure that so many days of rowing?
I think the biggest thing, which is it's always going to be your mental capacity and your mental strength. Physically, if you've never rowed a boat, it's going to stink like really bad to go out there, but you'll eventually pick it up. You'll learn how to do it better because you're out there for so long. So that was the least of, I guess, my worries, since I'm already very physically fit to do pretty much anything I want. It's more of that constant mental training. Cause when you're out there, you're rowing on average, shifts of 2 hours on, 2 hours off. So that means you're only getting 2 hours off yours, and you have to go to the bathroom, you have to make your food, you have to eat, and you have to sleep and do any other hygiene issues or call your parents, call your family members, whatever you have to do in that other 2 hours. So it's really about time management and knowing how to recover and knowing how to optimize your sleep and your time so you're able to utilize it the best you can and not get stressed out when you are sleep deprived, when you're malnourished, and when you're dehydrated. So it's really taking an inward inventory of yourself, really understanding who you are, really understanding your food, at least in order to be like to the success that I'm able to achieve is by knowing my food, knowing what to eat, when to eat, knowing when to take certain supplements, with how it works within my body to give me the energy when I'm tired and stuff. Because physically, you're going to get tired. Physically, you're going to be able to do it. It's how can you keep your body continuing to function as a machine for that long duration without any resources. So it's trying to focus on those little things because it will really help in the long run.
And are you rowing? You said you take you row for 2 hours and you take a break. So no, I is it a team that's rowing, or is it how does that work? Are there two people rowing this?
On my boat for the Atlantic, it was a two-man team. Same with the Pacific. We were a two-man. It can go up to a five-man team. On the Atlantic, you can also be a soloist. It's not for the sanctioned event. It is not available to be a soloist for the Pacific yet. However, so yeah, so when you're doing shifts, even if you're on a four-man team, usually the most common routine is two on, two off, because then you can have that change in shifts. However, there are times when the water's really bad, you might not be able to row. So everyone just hunkers down in the hatches and you wait until you can row again. Or if the conditions are amazing and you want to pick up speed or whatever you're encountering, you could be on the oars, you know, for we ended up doing a 1 hour on, 1 hour off. We've done like 5 hours on, you know, 2 hours off. Like it just depends on what you're trying to achieve. So it can fluctuate, and you have to be ready for your body to fluctuate to be able to perform when that change happens. And so it's really crucial that you're just staying on top of your sleep and your nutrition and your water the best you can in order to perform.
Okay, and this is a competitive event, so you have other teams, so you so so there is a winner, and you know there is a you know pecking order in terms of finish, right? Okay,
Yes. Yes. And
so
four-man teams are going to be the one, obviously, that win,
okay.
unless something happens. But it does come down to the route you choose. In the Atlantic, if you pick the northern route, and if you know, the northern route usually will hit a storm, so it can stop you in your tracks for days at a time, which is why most people go south, so you don't get stuck. But some years that storm doesn't happen, like in our year, and the two teams that did it, they flew. Like they were other two-man teams, and they beat the rest of the two-man teams by like over a week because
Wow.
they just, it's luck of the draw out there. Because it doesn't matter how good physically you are, it doesn't matter how knowledgeable you are about your boat, your best navigation, your route. It comes down to the elements that you encounter out there. And a half a mile in the ocean away from a different boat can make a world of difference. You could hit a different current. You could have a bad storm when someone else has nothing. It's crazy.
So a lot of that plays into your strategy to move forward, right? And what about navigation? You know, is it you use some kind of a technology for it? Is there special skills required for that?
Yeah, so we all have to get certified. There are certain certifications we all have to have. And like we have to be certified in like the VHF handheld radio. So like a lot of it's safety for ocean safety, emergency, in case something were to happen, you need to know what to do. But we do have a chart plotter on board. So you enter your GPS coordinates of your start and your end. And then along the way, if you're like for the Atlantic, it's a sailing route essentially. So you can pick certain waypoints to hit as you kind of row to adjust your coordinates and then kind of stay on your same track. Or like on the Pacific, the route we did had never been done before. So it was all pretty much a free for all, like, hey, what do you guys think is best? And we all just went out there with what we thought. And some people did really, really well. Other people got stuck in some stuff. But I mean, it was a successful fleet. So we all did amazing, which was I the people the four man team set a new world record. Each of the like a four man team, three man team, and two man team, they all we all set the fastest records, which was really neat. So we all apparently knew what we were doing, but it's luck of the draw out there. You just never know.
Awesome. And your the Pacific Challenge was from California, Monterey to Hawaii, correct?
Yep,
And
to
how many days
Kauai.
did that how many days did that take?
That took our team 45 days,
45 days.
and it was 2,800 miles.
2,800 miles. Any so any what difference did you see between the Atlantic and the Pacific? And any difference in challenges just as a from a rowing perspective?
Oh, such a different. I mean, it's not even, obviously they're different oceans, but not the same experience at all. Nothing is the same. So I would say the Atlantic, based on my experience, was like the easy ocean is how I would say it. And that's kind of what people know though, because that time of year when you're going, yeah, you can encounter some things, but there's a lot more consistency. So you're at least able to pretty much project what you're going to possibly encounter. Pacific is very inconsistent. You don't know what you're going to encounter. When we left, you've got hurricane season right around the corner, which you can't avoid because you only have a very short window to go in order to have enough time. So you're going to face something like that probably. And we ended up facing that. So that was interesting in and of itself. The water on the Atlantic is very big and flowy. It's still powerful, but I mean they're almost consistently big waves the whole time. And you're going about the same speed on the Pacific. However, it's not as big of waves, but they're a lot more forceful. So you had to row a lot harder on the Pacific because the first like 300 miles, the current is trying to suck you back into land. And so they really say between 200 to 300 miles is make or break if you're going to get away from the US or not. So it's just and on the Atlantic you don't have that. Pretty much you go down and you're away. You don't have that weird back current that sucks you into land. So you can pretty much take it and it will kind of guide you along the way. The Pacific is not like that. We finally hit something like that with a trade wind the last 3 days, and it was flying us. Like we weren't even rowing a ton because we would get hit knots of like 3.7 knots, you know. And I mean, we couldn't row faster than that if we wanted to. And I know that's not very fast, but out on the water, that's really fast, you know. And on the Pacific, right out the gate, you saw whales, you saw tons of wildlife, like tons of Pacific floaters, jellyfish, a lot of birds, a lot of different things. And it was overcast almost the entire time. So we had to worry about like battery management because we couldn't recharge our solar panels. So there were just, it was completely different. And on the Atlantic, you had sun every day. You would have storms on occasion, but we got rained on almost every day in the Pacific, and we hardly ever got rained on in the Atlantic. And it was sunny and hot, and it was overcast and dreary, you know. So, and we saw no wildlife. And there were a lot more boats on the Atlantic. You see so many boats because it's a huge shipping lane, essentially. And on the Pacific, we saw a couple, which was awesome still, but not nearly as many boats. So it's 100% different experience.
Oh, fascinating. And any scary moments in any of these?
Yeah, the Atlantic, I would say no. Even though it being my first row, we had a very uneventful row, which was great. On the Pacific, though, our third day, we were rowing and we got into some like 20-foot waves, so not the biggest that we've been in. And I love them because they're super fun and you get to like surf them and it's crazy. And so it just makes it a lot of fun rowing. And it's like a game to me, like, how can I jump this wave or how can I hit this other wave? And well, you get rogue waves, and it's the rogue waves that flip your boat. It's the rogue waves that hit you and makes you have a lot of issues. And we got hit with a rogue wave that came out of nowhere. And it knocked, we did a knockdown, and a knockdown means we were flipped on our side and it broke my oar. So it got stuck in the oar lock. And we got it out. My teammate Owen came out. He was awesome because he's had this happen once before on the Atlantic. And I would never had this happen. And I'm just like, this is, I was very wrecked after that. It was all, I had an hour and a half left on my shift, so I'd only been on there 30 minutes, and it was really getting gloomy out. The sun was going down, or at least the light was going down, and it was just obviously big waves, and I was scared at this point. So I was still rode through it, and as soon as we got out of it and I got off the oars, we're like, oh, we're just going to throw the para anchor. It's getting too rough out here. And I'm like, thank the Lord. Like, it was hard to finish the 2 hours.
Wow. And rowing in the night versus the day, is there a lot of visual cue you take when you're rowing, or is it more you're just using the navigation system and just going?
You kind of just go. So the only thing, so the navigation system itself is in the inside of the stern cabin. So I never really saw it unless I was in there changing the auto helm or something like that. So the only thing you see on your dials are your heading. You see what degree you're at, and then you also can see your speed at which that you're rowing. So then that kind of helps you, like if I can see that, I can see how fast I'm rowing and how fast the ocean is. So that way I can see how much input I'm able to have. And sometimes you might be like, I am actually hindering what the ocean's speed is naturally giving us. So that's why you just like go off the oars for a little bit, and then you can get back on and see if you're still slowing it down or if you're actually making an increase. So you're constantly looking at more of the dials than anything else, because it's just a lot of open water. There's not really anything to look at. You know, we saw more rainbows than I've ever probably seen in total in my life on the Pacific. It was crazy. And we saw a night rainbow, which was really cool. Never even knew those existed. So, I mean, you have certain things to look at, but for the most part, you kind of just look at your dials and zone out, because there's just no stimulation out there. Or you'll get too wrapped up in what's going on, and then you start dreading, hey, I've been on the oars. Hey, the speed's going too slow. You start getting in that negative mind pattern. So the more you can focus on something to keep your brain active is how you don't start getting into those negative perspectives, and you're able to not have those crashes in that mental strength that you've worked, you know, so you don't get caught in just like the mundane events of the ocean.
Yeah. Fascinating. So, you know, it seems like almost it's such a huge, training that you have to do on self, you know, just mind control, right? Just staying focused and being at it for a long time, right? I think the physiological part of it is one part of it, but I guess the bigger part of it is how do you stay focused and not get off the rails in terms of your, like don't not get bored, I guess, you know, in some sense, right?
And hearing from your family, because like when you call, a lot of people start getting like FOMO, right? They start like getting sad that they're missing out on something back home, or like the birthday parties, or you know, that people are going to concerts. This one was exceptionally hard because it was in the summer and people were gone, not answering our calls. We're like, hey, you, we're out here, come on, answer the phone, what are you doing? Like, don't you know you need to talk to us? But in like the Atlantic, it's over the winter when people aren't out and about. So you're able to have that connection a little bit more. So it was a lot different with that. And it would start playing games on people because they just started like missing home, dreading how long they were out there. Then you get stuck in the bad weather and you have to like throw the para anchor and you're sitting there and you just start dreading how much longer is it going to take, you know? So it really is trying how to not get in any of those bad cycles, because the more you can stay out of it, the easier your trip is going to be.
Great. So, and part of what you do with, you know, this adventure, especially the rowing part of it, is also because you want to bring awareness to the eating disorder, and you've even created a foundation now, right? And so a lot of what you're doing in a way also supports that foundation. So give us a sense of what this foundation is and how's that, how's that working out?
Yeah. So both rows were for eating disorder awareness, and my foundation is called Bear Moose Hideaway. And what essentially it is it allows people to come and get eating disorder services. So we're working on establishing a long-term residency facility here in Colorado so people can come and live aside from society, had their own customized, like it's a very bespoke eating disorder program that is very individualized to themselves because they get to make it with me. So it's not, there aren't foods, like if there's foods you're afraid of, I don't care. Like, I'm just like, how can we transition your mind essentially into understanding that you need to eat to live, not live to eat, you know, so you can combat that fear. So by allowing them to have, it's a functional eating disorder plan. So if someone says, I want to go hiking and that's what I want to do for my life, I want to be able to hike 5 miles a day, go to work. I'm like, cool. So I take them on a 5 mile hike. I let them plan their food, how they want to eat. And then after, you know, a mile and a half, when they start getting tired and not performing, we have a sit down. And that way we can constantly show you, hey, the food you brought, clearly you can see it's not working because you're not fueling yourself enough. So that way you can convert the mindset of food from it being fat or it making you look a certain way. You're able to be like, okay, I'm transitioning that mindset to food equals fuel, so I can see how much it takes for me to eat in my own circumstance for the life I want to live and be able to live it. That way I'm not having to eat this erroneous number that someone just told me, but I'm able to actually see it tangibly how that food works within my body to know how I can eat to sustain my body. So that's what we try and do. And that's what I have to do for my events, you know, as well. So it's really picking apart that and dissecting it down to a very minute level. So everybody's able to mentally like, okay, I can now accept this because I can see why I need to eat and the benefits of it, rather than me just saying, hey, you have to do this, because that's not helping anybody.
Right, right. And as a part of this, is there also, or let me maybe ask this differently. Now, food is such a complex topic, right? Especially over, I think, over the last 10 years, there's different philosophy or principles and points of views. And so in something like this that you're doing, how do you determine, one is, of course, the fuel part of it. The second is, how do you determine the effect of food on health overall, right? Because there's also things like, you know, lifestyle diseases that people deal with. And if you don't manage your food, then there's that. So how are you kind of juggling these different, you know, conflicting priorities, for lack of a better word?
No, that's a great question. And that's, you know, and that's part of what we do, right? Like, I make customized backpacking meals. So the way I make food, I make them for other people that have these dietary ailments that they can't just go eat something like me either, whether it's GERD, whether it's IBS, whether it be like diabetes, what have you, or it's just personal preference. You've got to find a way to eat, right? And yes, there are different things. Like, you can't not, you know, you can't only just live on apples, for say, which I tried to do and I got super sick. You have to have something in there, but we also can't just eat donuts every day. So how do you balance that out? And it comes down to, when someone's sick and in the eating disorder mindset, I just want you to be able to eat something to be able to get you on that track. And then we can kind of work out balancing the diet a little bit more to kind of balance out with foods that you're afraid of versus foods you're willing to eat and versus foods you shouldn't eat because of these health ailments that you might have. So it's really working with each person and being like, okay, hey, what do you want to eat? What do you like to eat? And what health ailments do you have? So that's usually what I start with. And then I ask one more question and say, what foods are you afraid of? And what foods eventually, once you're not sick or in this mindset, what would you like your diet to look like? Do you still want to have a diet plan where you just never eat your fear foods again and you're fine with that? Or do you want to be able to integrate them back in there? How can we work around that? So you just have to, you know, everybody should be taking an inventory. And I'm not going to say you're going to eat healthy every day. I can't. Like, if I don't eat something I consider a not so healthy food, like my peanut M&Ms, if I don't do that like every other day, my brain changes on me and it will start becoming afraid again. So it will start reverting into some of those eating disorder mindsets. And so I can't have that. So a way for me to combat that is I have to eat something that I would consider more on the like fun foods, you know, that's not necessarily uber healthy in order to combat my brain. So everyone's got something. It's you just got to find it, and then we just have to build something you to have a sustained healthy lifestyle. And it just comes down to, you know, if you're going to work out a lot, you've got to have more protein, right? It just is what it is. If you're a female within, you're going to have more iron, right? So you got to find food sources that have more iron. If you're someone who's younger, you need more calcium. Or if you're getting older, you know, you usually have to have more calcium again. So it's just knowing like some of those things as well, and just the demographics and just the different age ranges, how we can also model the food for what you need to be healthy. And then within that, how do you want it to look? You know, so many people are, I want to do keto today. I want to do Weight Watchers tomorrow. I want to do Atkins the next day. Let's just find something in moderation that you're going to be able to adhere to. I don't care if it's Atkins. I don't care if it's keto. I don't care. I don't care, you know, if it, like I said, if it's paleo, it doesn't matter to me. It's just whatever you're comfortable with that you can keep consistent with, that's what we need to build.
And how do people contact you on this for this foundation? Is there a website?
Yeah, people, a lot of people reach out to me via social media. All of my social media is open to the public. So it's, you know, Jamie Linker, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. And then we do have a website, which is bearmoosehideaway.com. And then we do have jamielinker.com, which has got all my other things that we do on there to help people. And so usually it's just that's how people start connecting me with everyone else. And it's, yeah, I love it.
Terrific. And that's great. That is very helpful. And you know, I'll definitely put this information on the show notes as well. So if you know folks want to reach out and connect and learn more or take your help, for sure they can reach out.
Thank you.
Now, what's next in your adventure? What are you cooking?
Oh man, yes, this has been the question everyone has asked. And as of September 1st, we announced our team. We are going to be the first team ever to row a circumnavigation of all three oceans back to back to back, which will start with the Indian Ocean next year between April and June, depending on the weather conditions. We're trying to get that right now. And then once we finish with that, so that will go from Geraldton, Australia to Grand Bay, Mauritius Island off of Africa. And that's 3,100 miles roughly. And then in December of 24, a couple months later, after we restock the boat, reinspect the boat, stuff like that, we will row from La Gomera, Spain in the Canary Islands, 3,000 miles, it's actually a little bit further, to Florida. And then we'll reinspect the boat again. We should arrive around February of 25. And then we'll drive the boat across the country to Monterey, where we'll do the Atlantic Campaign's World's Toughest Row, the Pacific Challenge, again from Monterey to Kauai, which is 2,800 miles that we just did. And that will start in June of 25. And once we get to Kauai in at the end of July, we will restock for a day or two, and then we'll finish our trek all the way to Cairns, Australia, which will take, that's like 3,400 miles, and it will take another couple months. So we should hopefully be done with the whole thing in October of 25.
So it's almost like you know, this is what you would be doing for almost a year, right? A year plus. This is going to be your life.
For, yes, 200 days on the water, a year and a half of dedication to make this happen. And we're raising money, obviously, like for four causes, which is why we're doing it. Eating disorders is my main cause, but we're doing it for like Wounded Warrior Project. We've got like Canine for Warriors, and then we've got Penny's Flight, which is another cause that we're doing for people with cancer and rehabbing them and stuff. So it's all about trying to get awareness to these causes. And we're really excited because, like I said, it's never been done before. So yeah, it's really big. It's about 12,000 miles in total. And it's, yeah, you're going to be living outside of life and out on the away from everything. So when we came back this last time, it was really challenging. A lot of racers had a problem coming back, like integrating again, way more so than the Atlantic. And after this, I'm probably just going to go be a hermit in the mountains because I'm like, I don't know how to do society anymore. Like, I just don't get it.
Be a monk.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Ocean Monk.
Yeah, hopefully the nonprofit's up and running. That way I can just go live in the mountains with all the people that I'm treating and, you know, have that awesome community out there. And that's what I really hope to come home to. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, all the best. And we'll, so is there a way to track this? Are you kind of reporting this online where people can track you?
Yes. So we have our team is called Team Ko'akai, which means sea warrior in Hawaiian. And so we will, we have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram page, we have all of our Facebook, Instagram pages, and then YB Tracker, or it's called Yellow Brick Tracker. It's a racing app that you put GPS that we'll have on our boat, which is how you can track these other events. And they are going to be working with us to constantly track our progress across all the oceans. So it will give you hourly updates. I think it's every 6 hours, it will do like a big update, like to know what's our estimated time of arrival and different stuff. And it's a completely comprehensive app that's just wonderful. So yes, we'd love everyone to follow on our journey.
Awesome. And this is more of a self-supported thing you're doing. It's not a competition, correct? While one segment of it is you're using a competitive thing, but the rest of it is your own, right?
Yes, we were going to do the Atlantic and the first part of the Pacific as sanctioned events. However, we have made the change to only the first portion of the Pacific because otherwise we're trying to raise money and it's going to cost us about $200,000 to do this. So by not doing the sanctioned event for the Atlantic, it'll save us about $50,000 in shipping and things like that, and race and trees and stuff, which we really want to do because we love Atlantic campaigns and they are so phenomenal. And the head safety officer is actually doing all of our safety for this. So he's wonderful. And I just can't say enough good things about them. It's just for cost reasons, we're trying to minimize that so more of our money can go to the charities. And so, yeah.
Got it. Great. All the best. We'll keep a track of how that's going, and we wish you a successful completion of this amazing adventure you're up to. So Jamie, we did cover quite a bit of ground in terms of how your journey is shaped, the why of it and what of it, and all the joys and, you know, challenges you deal with and what you're up to next. As a last part of my conversation, I have a fun Q&A round that I have with my guest. You want to jump into that?
I would love to. That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. First one, which I ask all my guests. Now, I know you did talk about a eating disorder, but at the same time, I do want to make sure I ask you this question anyway. Do you have a favorite junk food or a food that you like to indulge every now and then? Do you have one?
I do. I love frozen yogurt, actually. I love going and building your own frozen yogurt.
That's a healthy junk food anyway.
Not with all the toppings I put on it.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. That makes sense. A person you consider a role model.
Gosh. I couldn't pick just one. However, I would say my one when I was younger would be my grandma. She was my best friend and she was super active. And it was just the way she approached life with a positive perspective and like obstacles that were in her way. She was always thinking outside the box, almost like I Love Lucy was my grandma. So I just really looked up to her with that childlike and that fun, whimsical demeanor. And she was extremely smart and capable. And it was just everything that she took on, she was successful at. So it was just, I really, really loved how she was able to tackle life. So I would say probably my grandma.
Nice. The best compliment you received for your lifestyle?
I would say the best compliment, Atlantic Campaigns, the race organizers for the Atlantic and the Pacific, they were very worried about my food when I went to do the Pacific. I almost didn't get to row because they were so worried about my food and things like that and the struggles to try to get my food there with shipping and everything. Well, we finally get there and in Spain and we were getting ready to leave and they were they had told me before the race that I was their biggest worry. That was their biggest safety liability. And it really hurt hearing that, obviously, and I couldn't figure out why. So when I got to Spain, you know, like as they finally met me and saw what I was doing, they're like, you know, they changed their tune a lot. So right before we left, they told us that our boat not only was the first one to be inspected and passed, it was the first one in the water. They told us we were the first boat to actually be ready, set, ready to go. And it was so easy. So they were super excited about that. So just constant good things. But when I got off the water, I had told them before I left for the Atlantic that I was going to lose probably 8 pounds, like just knowing myself. When I got off the boat, I got weighed and I lost exactly 8 pounds. And the head safety guy, Ian, he came over and he told me, he's like, Jamie, I don't know how you did it. He's like, you look exactly the same. You sound exactly the same, like the entire time. And he said, we were so worried about you and you did better than we've ever seen by losing like the least amount of weight. So it was really just that compliment with everything I've had to learn about my food. Obviously, I'm doing it right. My training, I'm clearly doing it right. And so it was just that having that support when I had a little bit of resistance, just for safety reasons, which makes sense. They were able to see that all the hard work did pay off. So that was, it was wonderful.
Great. The worst criticism you've ever received for your choice of lifestyle.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's like a daily, that's a daily thing. Yeah. Usually everyone's just like, you're crazy. You know, you should never be able to do it. Like I said, Atlantic campaigns, them saying, you know, them almost not letting me row because I was different. You know, they knew I have, I've got debilitating asthma, like I said, and after having COVID four times, I only have like 38% lung capacity left. So I have that on top of an eating disorder. I shouldn't be able to do what I do. So I understand the cause for concern and the type of lifestyle I have. But I think being told by everybody, like every race I've pretty much done, they're just like, oh, you can't do that. Family, friends, oh, you can't do that. Like, that's crazy. I mean, I think that's what it is. It's just that doubt in me and the effort I've put in. That's probably the worst criticism I get, is just the doubt of the effort, I guess.
So how do you react to, especially socially, right? When you're out meeting people and they say, no, how do you react to that? Does it increase your resolve, or do you ignore them, or do you try to convince them or persuade them to have them look at it from a different perspective? How do you react? How do you respond to that?
I don't usually try and get people to change their perspective. I usually give them some more education. So maybe it's not so fear-based. You know, a lot of comments that they have, people have, it's because it's fear of the unknown. And people are like, oh, it's crazy because they can never fathom doing it themselves. But it's also because they have no idea the type of boat you're using. And then once you give a little bit more of the knowledge, they still usually think it's pretty crazy, but they're like more in a positive, like we support, you know, we really hope you're able to do it. And we're like cheering you on instead of being like, oh, you're crazy. It's just not going to happen. They kind of change that. So I really like to educate, because I think in life in general, we as humans, the more knowledge we have, the more successful we are, the more secure and confident we are. So it's the exact same thing. I would rather have more people educated, so that way we all have that inclusivity, because that's how you get it, right? With more education, you get more people on board, so you have more acceptance. Yeah. And I just think that's how I do it anyway.
That's great. Great, great attitude. I mean, I think it's a great, great way to look at it. And that's amazing. That's lovely. Your favorite workout gadget? Is there a favorite?
Oh, yes. I love sandbags. I love sandbags very much.
Yeah. Tell us more about it. How's Oh, why is that a favorite?
So years ago, I started training with an ex-Ranger. He's still my trainer to this day, Mark Salvador with Fit Fokker. And he's fantastic. But I was training for a GORUCK selection. And it's a very military-esque style of event. And you do a lot of sandbag carries and a lot of sandbag throws. And so I did it for a long time. And so now I just feel really comfortable, because it's a lot more pliable on your hands than a barbell. It's more functional than a barbell. I'm not going to be lifting a barbell in my everyday life, but a sandbag that emulates, you know, like a bag of grass seed or something, you know, it makes it more, it turns it into more of a reality, kind of a functional workout, even though I'm not going to be throwing, you know, a 70 pound bag of seed because it's going to break. It brings it kind of more into, I'm not just lifting iron that's kind of made to work out. It has that more fluidity into like a normal life setting or that survival setting, which is what I specialize in. So I like it for those reasons. And I can take it hiking. I can take it in my car. It's compact. I can carry it on top of my weight vest and my rucksack. So you can do everything with it. I love it. And you can make it as heavy as you want.
Yeah, that makes sense. I haven't used it, but I'm intrigued now to see how I can incorporate it in my workouts. But I agree with you. It makes sense. It's a lot of functional strength versus, I'm mostly a runner and I do like one day or maybe one day, mostly a week of strength training. And I usually do barbells or dumbbells, right? Mm-hmm. But what you're saying makes sense, because if you can use the sandbags, mm-hmm. I think it also makes your running better because you're doing more functional strength.
Yeah, and it kind of works more of the stabilizer muscles I found, which I need for the things I do. But also, barbells, it's so rigid. It'll hurt your hands or whatever, or your wrists in some of the positions, you know. In this, there's just that there's more give. So I'm able to actually have better form almost in a sense because of that. And I can get better ranges of motion. So I just feel I'm not as limited as I am with a barbell as far as like the stabilizer muscles, but also because you can fling it differently and stuff. And it's not like that hard going to hurt and hit you. You actually build some of those fast twitch muscles, which as an endurance athlete, you don't really have. So trying to gain that back, it's a really good way to kind of start building some of that fast twitch when you have so much slow twitch. So I like it, I guess. You should, I can't wait to hear how you like it if you try it.
yeah, I'm going to do some research on that. All right. Are you a sunrise or a sunset person?
Oh, man. I would say I'm a blue hour person if I had to, right before sunset or sunrise. I love that blue hour right before it transitions into the light because it's still quiet and it's nice and cool. But I would probably say sunrise. The colors, at least out here, are so much more vibrant and pretty that I'll take sunrise.
All right. The last question I have is if we made a movie of your life, A, what genre would you put it in? And B, who would be the actor you would hire to play your character?
Oh my gosh, this was the hardest question of them all, my lord. Genre, it would probably, it'd have to be, I want to say action, but probably not. Like if I take everyday life, it'd probably be like a drama. Like a drama. And I would say I would probably pick Natalie Portman if I had to. There are so many amazing actresses out there, but she's just so versatile and has that whimsical, like, but spunky personality. I think she'd pull it off really well.
All right. Yeah. Nice choice. Natalie, we're sending you a script. Check your inbox.
Yes.
Hey, that was great. You did well in the Q&A round. Learned a few more things about you in the process. We're kind of coming to a wrap-up here, Jamie. I want to give you the last word. Any final, you know, message you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I would love to. My biggest message that I like to get out to everybody is just that, you know, if you have a dream, if you have a goal, whatever it is, there should be nothing that stands in your way, whether you're facing an adversity, a health issue, any sort of obstacle in your way. As long as you want it, you can find a way to make a plan, either reach out to people, build a plan yourself in order to make that happen, and then start your accountability to work towards making that happen. Because there's no reason that if you want something bad enough, you shouldn't be able to have it. And I truly believe as long as you want it and put a plan in action and you work towards that goal, there should be nothing that should stop you.
Yeah, great message. And, you know, your journey definitely is a testimonial to that, principle. Hey, Jamie, thanks again for sharing with us your journey, your lessons, and what you're up to, which is much bigger than some of the events that you're participating. You're out there trying to make a difference overall to people who are dealing with eating disorders. So good luck with that, and good luck with whatever you're up to the next couple of years. We'll stay in touch. Have a great afternoon, and we'll stay in touch.
Wonderful. No, thanks for having me. This has been great. I have enjoyed it, and I hope to be back after the next adventure. See how it goes.
Absolutely. Would love to. Yeah. All right.